The idea of finding your passion. I think we always say, you know, if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. And we encourage people to find their passion, to, you know, do what you really love. But is the way we say that possibly putting them, is there a way that that's not the best advice in the world? Do we need to be a little more realistic about our passions? Article I saw a couple of weeks ago said, your passion isn't out there waiting to be discovered. It's not a mysterious force that will, when found, remove all obstacles from your path. In fact, psychologists argue in a new study that the pithy mantra, find your passion, may be a dangerous distraction. One of the people that was part of this study that they're writing about in Quartz is Paul O'Keefe. He is an assistant professor of social sciences at the Yale NUS College. He joins us on the phone right now. Hey, Paul, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you? Thanks.
Thank you very much for jumping on the phone with us. Explaining, this is Yale National University of Singapore?
Yes. It is a collaborative institution between the National University of Singapore and Yale University.
Very cool. And how long have you been in Singapore?
I've been a professor there for about 4 years now.
And how was the summit, I have to ask? Was that crazy time?
Luckily, I was in the United States for that one.
Are you serious? Is that luckily? Or would
yeah,
that have
I
been,
was.
I would think it would have been interesting to be there.
I happen to be at a conference in California.
Huh. So you missed it all.
Well, I missed it.
Well, let me ask you a little bit about this, because I want to make sure I'm saying this right. You know, generally we tell people do what you love or find your passion and all of these things. But in this study, you guys say that passion can't just be me sitting back. Well, what are you passionate? Well, you know, I really love space, so maybe I should be an astronaut. That's not enough for us to pursue. You have to kind of feed your passion. You have to be willing to engage and understand that passion doesn't mean just what you love because it's easy.
Yeah. So as you were saying, some of the mantras that we hear suggest that we have this passion. So if we tell people to find their passion, what that could mean for some people is that it's inherent within them and it merely needs to be revealed, right? It's in us. We were maybe born with them, mm-hmm. and they're preformed and ready to go. And if people believe that, so we call this a fixed theory of interest. And if people believe this, then, well, if you've already established some pretty, you know, strong interests, that might stop you from exploring other areas. In fact, it may not even make sense to explore other areas if you think that your interests are fixed and that you've already found them.
So if you think that you were born to do this, so that's what they were born to do, then you will just, you might not explore other areas that maybe you would have loved more and been more engaged in and better at?
Well, so in this research, we really kind of divorce it from abilities. That's a little bit of a different topic. So we're just talking about people's interests. Are they going to develop other interests or not? And people with what we call a growth theory believe that interests might start as like a spark, a curiosity, but that it's something that grows over time, right? With involvement, with commitment, maybe discipline even, but it's something that develops. And so even for those people, if they have really strong interests, that doesn't preclude them for exploring other areas and developing new interests.
Okay. And are those just the two theories, either fixed or growth?
So this is stemming from a long history of research. Well, it goes back several decades now that examines how people, you know, think about multiple attributes about themselves, whether it be their personality or their intelligence, their shyness, and whether these things are fixed and relatively stable or if they're subject to change and improvement. So these are two kind of fundamental ways people think about their characteristics, their attributes. And we've taken this way of thinking and applied it to how people think about the nature of interests and how they operate and what, you know, what they can expect from their interests. when they find them.
When you realize that somebody is a fixed theory person versus a growth theory person, do we want to change that? Do we all want to be growth theory persons? Is there any benefit to being a fixed theory person?
Well, there could be. I'm an educator. I teach many undergraduates. So, and, you know, part of the challenge and the amazingness of college is that one of the goals of college is to get students engaged in many different topics. We don't necessarily, at least in the United States, we don't want to educate students in a silo. We want them to understand multiple topics. That's what a liberal arts education is all about. We want them to see connections among these topics and to see how integrated the world is. So from that perspective, what our research suggests is that a growth mindset is going to help our students do that. This is merely kind of our first step in examining these beliefs about interest. So we don't know. There could be benefits to having a fixed theory. Maybe for some fields that might be more, that rely maybe more on one discipline rather than multiple disciplines, maybe there is some sort of benefit. But so far, we don't necessarily see that. We see that people with this growth mindset are not only engaging and as interested in their own interests, you know, their pre-existing interests, as fixed theorists are, but they're also developing new interests. They're open to new interests. And when those interests become difficult, they don't give up on them.
Well, I imagine this is a very important study when it comes to colleges, too, because we're all in the situation where the expense of college has grown by so much here in the United States that kids these days who are leaving high school are facing more and more pressure to know why they're going to college. I went to a liberal arts college. I had no idea what I wanted to do. At 46, I feel like I'm still figuring it out. But kids these days don't get that luxury of going somewhere, walking away with $100,000 in debt and not exactly knowing why they went there in the first place, other than it was great and I made a lot of good friends and I really loved it. Sure. Knowing how to pursue passions and what that means, is there a way that we can then correlate this to our kids and how we use this information to try to not helicopter them to death, but help them figure out how to develop their passions and maybe not shy away from certain things?
Well, yeah, sure. So one of the very important things that we found in this paper is that, let me go back just a little bit and you know, talk about theoretically how this implication is grounded, that if you believe that interests are fixed, then, as I said before, you believe that they're preformed, and then they, you know, when they're found, they're revealed 100%. And with that, our research finds that those people think that pursuing those interests and passions will come easily, right? People with a growth theory have different anticipation, different expectations for what their motivation will be. They anticipate difficulties, because that is part of the developmental process. So the last study in that paper, what we found is that after getting students really interested in a topic, in our case, we got them really interested in astrophysics with a fun animated cartoon that discusses black holes and Stephen Hawking's theories. It was very accessible to people. So everyone was really interested in it. And then we followed it up with something more difficult. We had them read an actual scientific article on black holes. So this time it was more complicated, a little bit more abstract. There were some equations. So it was more difficult to understand. And what we found, although both fixed and growth theorists, they dropped their interest a little bit when it became more difficult. For growth theorists, they maintained their interest. They expected difficulty. They expected that pursuing a new interest is going to be difficult at some times. It's a developmental process. For fixed theorists, they actually went from being fascinated to about 5 to 7 minutes later being uninterested, reporting that they were uninterested in the topic when it got difficult. So when we are encouraging students or children, employees, to find their passion, or we might be suggesting to them that, you know, your interests are going to be 100%, and if things get difficult, that must mean it's not your true interest after all, right? And with a growth theory, we're telling them, if we tell them that their interests and passions are developed, we're suggesting to them it's a process, and because it's a process, sometimes it's going to be difficult, and that's okay.
Yeah, it's very interesting, and that all makes perfect sense. I wonder if there's an area, and I don't want to sound like I'm advocating being a quitter or anything like that, because I don't mean to sound like that. But, you know, you wonder if there's something to knowing your limits or knowing what your passions, how far your passions will really go. If I, you know, if you showed me a medical video in school and like, man, I want to be a doctor. Yeah, I'm going to do this. And then the first time I took a class, it was really difficult. I said, yeah, but I'm going to stick through it. And then I'm getting C's and D's. And I'm but I know if I, and then I just never get there. We might look back and go, would you have been better off realizing at the time maybe that wasn't for you because you just don't have that area to do all that? Where does that fit in that thinking?
Well, you know, I it's certainly possible that that could happen, and it does happen in the real world. You just have to watch American Idol to to realize that that happens. But so far in our research and past research on growth mindsets, we just don't see this unrealistic behavior. You know, we're not seeing people who say that they can develop an interest in anything and they're going to go for it 100%. It's not really that. It's just this idea. These mindsets, the reason that they can be so powerful is because these are beliefs, just like any other beliefs, and our beliefs are the lenses through which we see the world, right? So we, our interpretations of the world are being colored by our beliefs about the nature of interest, and it's just, for a growth theorist, it's just leading them to be more open to new interests, our research shows, and also to expect difficulties when they arise. It doesn't, theoretically, it doesn't say anything about pursuing a relentless pursuit of interests and passions when things aren't going well. It's assumed that there's this realistic interpretation that's going on here that, you know, if things aren't happening, if I'm not getting all those singing gigs or acting gigs that I hope to get, you know, maybe this is something I can be passionate about, I can love, but, you know, there might be other things that might be wiser for me to pursue. So, yeah, we don't see any of these really deleterious outcomes associated with a growth theory. But, again, there's a lot more to investigate.
There's an interesting piece at the end of the article that says, those who search for their one true love have unrealistic expectations and can end up on an endless and empty quest. Meanwhile, those who believe that love is a project and a process will exercise more patience when their partner falls short of expectations and can ultimately experience moments of true love. Extend the logic to interest, and the chances of actually being passionately fascinated increases. I think that's interesting to relate it to love, because there really are kind of, I find, two types of people in the world. The ones that think there is this one true love out there for you. I guess it's sort of the same thing as thinking there's this one true passion within you. You just got to find it, and then you'll have success. And maybe the more realistic person says, there's many people you could fall in love with, but it doesn't mean it's going to happen and then just everything's easy. It's still going to be a lot of work and a lot of education and patience and all these things if that's really going to work out in the end.
Absolutely. And you know what? That's one of the ways that we talk about it in the introduction to our paper, because it really is a great analog. It's a way to think about our interests and passions in a way that maybe is more tangible for a lot of people, because these ideas, just like these ideas about romantic ideas about passions and interests, people have very romantic and unfortunately unrealistic ideas about romantic relationships and what that we should be finding that one, and that when we do find that one, everything's going to work out perfectly. And that's not a realistic way to pursue our goals.
Yeah, it's not. how do you decide? What would your general theory be on your passions and chasing your passions? I know that what we're learning is that, you know, don't just get dissuaded by something because it gets difficult. Anything in life, I guess we go with the old theory that anything worth doing is worth doing well, and it's going to be difficult. Nothing is easy. So don't be mm-hmm. shaken if your passion suddenly seems a little more difficult. Keep with it and see where it takes you. And maybe ultimately it will not be the thing for you, but don't just give up because it wasn't easy. Just because it's your passion doesn't mean it should be easy. Go ahead.
The first thing that comes to my mind are people who learning how to learn an instrument. You know, I'm a musician. I remember starting myself, and it's just so incredibly difficult. I mean, almost no matter what instrument you pick up, your hand-eye coordination is just totally different. You're not accustomed to it. You got to get over this hump. And these things are really important because if you believe that, you know, your true interest, your true passion is playing this instrument, and it doesn't come super easy really quickly, then it's basically violating your expectation. It's saying that, oh, this isn't my true interest or passion after all. I have to keep looking. If you have a growth theory, it's simply getting you to interpret that exact same situation a little differently. It's saying that I expect it to be a journey, a process, a developmental process. And it's okay that it's difficult now. That doesn't mean that this isn't my interest. This is all part of it, right? So these are just very subtle differences in how we interpret things and how they can really have quite different outcomes.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, you know, taking up an instrument, because I think that's such a common thing for American kids, at least back in the day when the schools more often had bands, that you get to fourth or fifth grade and we're going to play instruments. Who wants to play? And then you all come home with something. Your parents go, oh, my God, no. And then you're, you know, playing the clarinet for 3 weeks like I did, and then going, oh, God, this is terrible. I can't do this. And then you quit. And I wonder if in your study, if you looked at people who... If you did a big study of people who picked up an instrument and stuck with it versus those of us that quit very quickly, how we would fit in versus growth and fixed theory in that way. I wonder if the people who stuck with it, because it was difficult probably for 85% of the people, but if they still learned to play that instrument and played it for a few years, I wonder if that helped them develop the idea that, sometimes in life things are difficult doesn't mean you quit.
I have no doubt that a growth mindset would be, at least in part, a predictor of sticking with the instrument. We haven't looked at it, but it would be that domain in particular, music and learning musical instruments, but it would be a really fantastic area to look at. In our case, for our research, we used an analog for that. And I say that only in terms of difficulty, in that people can get really excited about astrophysics, right? You look at kids who see the latest Star Wars movie, and then they just get fascinated by space, right? Just like I was when I saw Return of the Jedi in the theater when I was a kid, you know? But it's that might spark an interest. But when they finally decide to take that interest a little step further and they go take a college course in astrophysics, you know, fixed theorists might be really fazed by the difficulty, but the growth theorists are going to be okay with it. They're going to anticipate it. They know it's there, and it's okay. And so we think that we haven't done, we've done a few longer-term studies that haven't been published yet, but there is evidence to suggest that growth theorists are sticking with these classes, and they're actually learning more. So this is really important. It doesn't just stop at interest.
Well, do we develop growth theorists, or are they born that way? Is it a product of how we're raising our kids?
It's a total product of how we socialize children, the messages we give employees, the messages teachers give their students. And a lot of times they're really well-intended things that are said. You open the show by saying, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. You know, we've heard that our whole lives, and it's really well intended, right? It's meant to get people to really search for something that they love. But what it also suggests is that if you encounter difficulty, then abandon it. Go look for something else that comes totally easily to you, that you love and comes totally easily to you. That's really, really terrible advice to be giving people. But these types of nuances, these subtleties in what we say to these people, they get they're understood. You know, kids are smart. Students are smart. They hear these things and they interpret them in these ways. So I think we need to be more careful about what we're saying to people. We need to be focusing on development, suggesting that these things take time. You know, these things, you have to get involved. You have to, it involves some commitment, you know. The more you stick with something, the more you learn about it, the more you get excited about it, the more personally valuable it becomes. So suggesting to students, employees, children that interests are developed, I think goes a long way. So if we can change the conversation, change the language around how we encourage these people, I think that'll go a long way. So we're not born with these. These are messages we get that we're socialized with.
But we're not saying don't pursue your passion. We're saying be more open to the different passions you might have and be more exploratory with them. Don't quit something that you maybe thought you loved just because it seemed a little more difficult than you thought it would be.
Yeah, and one of the big implications here is it's not that you're, you know, jumping from one interest to another. That's farthest from the point that we're trying to make. You could be someone with a deep, abiding passion for painting, but why can't you also develop interests in mathematics, the sciences, this and that? You know, we wouldn't have, you know, things like Apple or Facebook if the people behind them didn't have interest in both humanities and the sciences. These are, you know, examples of how those things could be merged, right? So if you can have strong interests but also develop other interests and see how they're connected, that's a really great thing. And again, as an educator, that's really what I want my students to do, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're speaking with Paul O'Keefe. He's an assistant professor of social sciences at the Yale National University of Singapore College. Can you hang on for just a minute? I have to take a quick break for the news, but I do want to ask you a couple more questions about our kids going into college and their passions. Can you hang on for just a couple?
Absolutely.
All right. Paul O'Keefe will join us right after the news. Let's take a quick break. Then we'll do the headlines with Roger and then get back at it with Paul and your questions or comments as well if you need. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Bubala here with you, 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for hanging out overnights with us. We're here until 5 a.m. when Orion's here with the morning show. We're chatting with Paul O'Keefe. He's an assistant professor of social sciences at the Yale National University of Singapore. And Paul, how many years have you been living over in Singapore now? Oh, hold on.
I've been here for 4 years.
4 years, man. And what is life like in Singapore? How different is it than our everyday American life?
Oh, it's different in, you know, some fundamental ways. But I would say that being here, it's a very smooth transition. It's a very cosmopolitan city, a very international city, very diverse. You know, there are some, you know, some cultural differences here and there, but it's a very easy city to live in, very expensive.
And in general, is it pretty friendly to Americans? Is with their current state of the world, is it friendly to Americans to be over there?
Absolutely, yeah. Very. It's a country that embraces diversity, lots of a huge expat community here, so it's no complaints.
Excellent. So I still wanted to ask you one thing. Is we were talking a little bit about kids going into college these days, and so I went to a liberal arts college, and I went into school not knowing what I wanted to do. But with the cost of school these days, you know, that is a concern, and I know a lot of kids in our neighborhood that are doing a couple years of junior college while they figure out what they want to go to school for. is that, you know, that fundamental difference that school costs so much these days that there's more pressure on kids to know what they want to do and go to school for a specific reason. Is that good, or do you think that that's possibly going to be detrimental, that kids need to go in a little more with an open mind and figure out what life has to offer and what their true passions really are? Asking a senior in high school to know exactly why they want to go to a college and what they're planning to do there, is that too much pressure to put on kids?
Well, it's interesting you asked that, given that we were just talking about cultural differences, because, you know, the educational system in Singapore is quite different than the United States. Around the time of high school, they're starting to specialize. So by the time they even get into college, at least most of the colleges here, they are already, they started at, with a specialty. So, and this isn't just Singapore, that this, you know, this type of education exists in many parts of the world, where you take on a focus very early. Quite different from the American perspective, which embraces the liberal arts, even at our big R1 schools, we have a liberal arts program such that, you know, we're getting students to experience and delve into many topics, understand those topics, and then later specialize. You know, that's where the major comes in. So it's not a problem to have kids explore. I think it's a very good thing. I think it's, you know, even within in the Singaporean system where they're specializing very early, as long as they're perhaps seeking out opportunities, and hopefully there's some support for opportunities to explore other areas, and that they're doing it with the mindset that more interest can be developed. It's not just this one. If I'm decided I'm going to be an engineer, that there are other really cool things that complement my interest in engineering, right? Why can't an engineer, so an engineering student, also think, you know, how can I take what we know in the social sciences or cultural anthropology and understand how I can bring engineering innovations to maybe remote parts of the world who need potable water, this and that. So, I think providing opportunities to our students is a really, really great thing for them to explore different topics. But at the end of the day, what our research is showing is you can give all the opportunities in the world to a fixed theorist, but they may not be taking those opportunities seriously. They may not be developing interest because they just don't think that that is the way interests work. So for me, what should be encouraged there, and my co-authors would agree that we need to be encouraging students to think of interests as developed. So whatever school system they go into, a growth mindset has the potential to help them.
And we can you would say that we could change, if we're a fixed theorist, we can work on that, we could become more of a growth theorist. Is there a point in life where we're kind of, well, he's a fixed theorist, we're not going to change him now?
No, I I'm a very optimistic person.
Because you're a growth theorist.
Exactly. Their beliefs, right? Some beliefs can be very, very, they can stick. They can be very sticky. You know, people's political beliefs, their religious beliefs, we all know that some people are very rigid. And there's a whole host of research showing how difficult it can be to change people's beliefs. But it can be done, right? All of us have had some fairly fundamental things, ways that we used to think, and now we think differently. So even as adults, I'm very optimistic that we can change this way of thinking. But I think what you're suggesting is that it might be a little easier with younger people, and I think that's probably right, because they're more suggestible, they're more open to, they don't understand, at least in their head, they don't think that they totally understand the world yet, so they're more open to different ways of thinking, right?
Yeah, I would imagine they are. And I imagine for those of us that are older and more kind of, you know, think of ourselves as fixed in our ways, and some of those ways which we acknowledge we're not really thrilled with ourselves about, right? That, well, I'm pretty pessimistic about this, or I'm not like this. I wish I wasn't like this. I wonder how much we really can change ourselves later in life. Is it a matter of realization and then working on it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it has to be very authentic, too. You can't just have someone come up and say, you need to change your mindset. You know, if someone tells me I'm a highly reactive person, if someone tells me I need to change something, I'm not going to have that. And a lot of people are like that, right? So, so that's why I'm stressing, like, the language that we use. Instead of going around telling people that, you know, this is a bad mindset, you need to change that. It's if the language changes in our culture, and it'll take on a different meaning of what interests are, what you should expect from your interests and passions. And I think that part of that, you know, intertwining it within how people are socialized is going to make a big difference. You know, older people, obviously, there's a lot more stress in their lives. They have bigger things to worry about, like paying bills and feeding their families, than to worry about, you know, some of these other things that might be more of a luxury, like pursuing a passion. So that's understandable. That's certainly one explanation for why it might be more difficult to change your mind as you're older. But when you're, you know, younger, at least you have more latitude there. And so to the extent to which we can change the language in schools and so forth, that'll be really good.
Paul, is it possible for us to be both a fixed and a growth theorist? Like, in some aspects of my life, I'm really stuck in my certain way and I only see things one way, but in other things, or are we generally, you're either one or the other, and that kind of encompasses everything?
Absolutely. So these beliefs, there's considerable research on this. These fixed and growth beliefs can be domain to domain. So some people might have a fixed theory about their shyness. They think that they're a shy person, then that's never going to change, right? But they could also have a growth theory about their intelligence, right? That even if they're struggling in their math class, they believe that their intelligence is improvable, and then they can learn and you know, work hard to continue learning. And even within, you know, domains for theories of intelligence, people's beliefs about the malleability of intelligence, you might have a fixed theory in the humanities, but a growth theory in math. So these are definitely domain specific, and you know, each one is going to be crafted in part by one's own experience and their interpretation of all those experiences that they have.
Mm. It's fascinating study. I really appreciate you jumping on the phone. Paul O'Keefe is an assistant professor of social sciences at the Yale National University of Singapore College. And I hope we can talk again. It's really been fun being enlightened by you.